Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. Today is Friday, September 16th. It's been a busy, few weeks, I think, was the last time we recorded.
It's been a little while, yeah.
You know, Matt moved into our house. I'm about to move in. So we just got a lot going on. You started school. I'm about to go back to the office for the first time. I've been working from home. It's just a lot going on. So... And I was out of town. I was in Florida for the Utah-Florida game. We'll talk about that. Just a lot going on. So trying to be more consistent. Once we move into the place, I think we'll be not only more consistent, but also we were just talking before we got on air about, you know, trying to figure out how we'll do the video. We're going to start adding a YouTube component and things like that. So we'll get a lot more consistent. Just a very busy time right now.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's going to be good. And I think, yeah, we'll have a little bit better setup. So should have some exciting things coming.
We'll have a much better setup. And exciting stuff coming. We do have a good, exciting guest on today. Eli Homestead, BYU soccer player. I met him. He was a Mormon missionary in Scottsdale when I was living there. And I didn't know he was on the BYU soccer team. And then I ran into him in Provo when I was there, like on a date. I just ran into him with his family or something. And we caught up. He's a good dude. So it's fun to talk to him. So that's the interview we have today. And as far as what we're talking about, there's a lot going on. The World Cup jerseys have been released for this Qatar World Cup in the winter. There's been some NBA trades since we last spoke. The football started. We haven't talked about any football since it started. So we'll do probably a lot of that, but a little bit of everything. But let's start the World Cup, I guess. I can't think of any other small talk stuff.
Yeah, no, I think, I do want to ask you about your Florida trip and kind of some of the non-football aspects, but we can get to that when we get there. I just wanted, and I guess I don't know that I have anything to say about the World Cup quite yet, except for, have you seen the U.S. soccer jerseys yet?
Yes, I have. Yeah, and when I said World Cup, I meant just the jerseys specifically. Yeah.
They are really, I think almost certainly the worst U.S. jerseys I've ever seen.
They're horrible. Awful. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, the blue ones are like bad, but kind of like passively bad. Like, I feel like I'm going to forget about them. The white ones look like something that Diadora made. And by the way, I don't mind Diadora, but it looks like something Diadora made in, like, 2004, which I think was kind of the worst era for sports clothes. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Like, they've just got weird blue patches in spaces that don't really make sense. Well, especially like, and Jake's just flipping through some other jerseys for some of the other, and they're also Nike jerseys, and they just look so good. And like, I don't know. Wait, hold on. Go back down to Brazil.
That is Australia.
Australia. Okay. So Australia is doing kind of the same thing of us and is also, I mean, it's not as bad as what ours is, but still
the logo
is
just so big.
Yeah.
It's so big.
Yeah. I read a thing and it was like, we're trying to show the diversity in the United States. So the logo is big, like a basketball jersey, and the numbers are going to look like football jerseys. And it's like, why? This is why other countries don't think that we do soccer.
I think the logo in general looks like the U.S. Railway logo.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I feel like, yeah, I think because the soccer jersey, the logo that we had in the 90s with the soccer jersey, that was my favorite. But it kind of like has like a 90s charm about it, at least. And I think this one they got right now, they were trying to look like the 1910 to the 1940 Olympics, like the U.S. logo that like Jesse Owens or would have worn in the Olympics and stuff. And they should have, like, if they liked that so much, they should have just done that again.
Yeah. The Where's Waldo and the diagonal stripe, like the Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, Michael Bradley, those are the best ones, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. I just got to the Puma ones. Have you seen these?
Oh, yeah, the Puma ones are...
These are horrible.
Really bad.
So, yeah, because every... Like, the article I'm reading for Sports Illustrated, it has them, like, by brand, like Nike, Puma, Adidas, blah, blah, blah. The Puma one, and typically they do generally do the same thing. Was it the last World Cup where like every Nike jersey was the exact same? Us in England had like literally the same kit.
Right.
Puma is not like the exact same, but they're basically the exact same, and none of them are good.
And by the same, it looks like, you know how distance runners have that bib that they wear in the front of their jerseys? It looks like they've placed one of those on the front of all their soccer jerseys.
It's not good. Another moment where you're forgetting how little people watch track besides you.
But they've been stopped in traffic by a marathon on accident, you know?
Yeah, no, I think they know what you mean, but yeah. Mexico's are cool.
Yeah, Mexico might have the best jerseys of the tournament. Adidas is the clear winner. They have a little bit different Adidas logo, which is nice, because if you're changing the three stripes thing, I feel like it can go bad pretty easy, but they nailed the Adidas logo. And all the Adidas, there's not an Adidas jersey I don't like this year.
I know this is great podcast content. This will be better when we have a video of just talking about jerseys.
Yeah.
But am I allowed to say I like Saudi Arabia's?
Sure. Yeah. It's a great looking jersey. I kind of thought it was Nigeria when I saw it at first.
I don't know. Cause like with the LIV Golf thing, and rightfully so. So I don't want to come off Phil Mickelson. Saudi Arabia does some horrible stuff. So I'm not saying that, but I didn't feel like anyone brought it up till LIV Golf happened, you know?
Yes.
And like English soccer has been doing this for forever. Like Manchester City didn't win till they got bought by Saudi owners. One of my favorite teams, Newcastle, has Saudi ownership now. So I feel hesitant to criticize LIV Golf because I'm very happy when Newcastle buys someone, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So not to make it political or about Saudi Arabia, but just a comment.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of interesting discussions we've had some of these discussions. If you're not aware, in sending the World Cup to Qatar, they had to build a lot of stadiums. A lot, like thousands of workers died building the stadiums, which is just crazy, crazy too many. It's still probably going to be too hot, even though it's in November. So it's going to be a weird World Cup.
Well, having it, yeah, I guess we are talking about Middle Eastern politics now. Having it in November is dumb because that's in the middle of the, like, not U.S., everywhere else in the world, their football season.
Yeah, and, like, I like an international break, but those are usually, it's like a two-week window for the most
part. Yeah, it's for, like, one or two qualifying matches. It's not for the entire World Cup.
Yeah, this is going to be a good month.
Like, I probably should have looked this up because I didn't know we'd be talking about this. I didn't even see what, like, the Premier League or La Liga have done with, like, the scheduling. Are they just, like, cramming it in? Do they end a little later than normal? Because they can't play their games without the World Cup players.
No, I don't. I mean, they might have to. They might just, like, I bet they take a 2-3 week break, but I bet there's going to be a point. It's like everybody just has to play without their World Cup players.
That would be a bummer. We should look at what clubs would be most affected by that. Like,
it's got to be Man City, right?
Yeah, or France. Oh, France
oh,
is.
Oh, well, like we're talking about the.
Oh, yeah, well, so I bet France. So I'm trying to think. So PSG has Mbappe, but then yeah. I don't know. Well, I guess PSG stars. Mbappe's the only French guy, actually. So.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to look at, like, the favorites. England, I imagine, like, it has to be a Premier League team, I imagine. Well, just because I think England and France are going to do well. I think those are the two favorites right now.
Oh, as far as, like, who goes farthest in the World Cup.
Yeah, well, with that, I'm trying to think of, like, what club teams those countries have, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. No, it's hard to, I know Liverpool does have a lot of English players. I do think Man City has a lot of English players.
Yeah, The ones I'm thinking of, though, are like Holland and De Bruyne and stuff, and they aren't English, but I know they have a lot of English players.
Yeah.
Well.
Chelsea just got Raheem Sterling. Mason Mount is certainly going to be on the team for England. It might, in a weird way, it might be Tottenham, just because if they go far and they lose Harry Kane, I think he is going to be the biggest loss, maybe for any Premier League team. Like, I think he's a player that is going to hurt the most, even though I forget the player's name who actually scored more goals than Harry Kane.
The Korean guy?
Yes. I know that we should know his name.
I'm not going to guess because I'm thinking of Park Ji-sung, but he played for Manchester United in like 2004.
Yes. Son Heung-min.
Yeah.
I thought there was a Min in there, but anywho. So yeah, he, but again, you know, if Correa goes far, which they probably won't, that's a huge, huge loss for Tottenham.
Well, in Portugal, thanks to this graphic for reminding me, they have Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes, and they both play for Manchester United.
Yeah, so that'd be a real problem for Man U.
Yeah, and then they have Marcus Rashford, who plays for England, Anthony Martial. I imagine he's on the French team. I guess I haven't confirmed that because France is loaded, but yeah. It'd be hard to think Martial's not on the French team. And they got Jadon Sancho, who plays for England. I don't know if Luke Shaw will make the team. It'll be interesting to see. I'm excited for the World Cup, though, even though it should have already happened and been taken care of. That's one of the things we asked Eli about, was who he thinks will win the World Cup. So wait to the interview to hear that.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Was there anything else besides the football in the Florida before we got to the interview?
Not that comes to mind. Well, we'll
see. Donovan Mitchell
takes us. Oh, that's true.
Got traded. We can talk about that quickly unless you want to do that after.
No, I think that's good.
Well, Donovan Mitchell got traded. I think that's the only NBA news that's happened since Patrick Beverley got traded as well.
Yes. Yeah.
What was it, Donovan Mitchell? I know what happened, but I just want to look up the return so I can read it. Because I know Sexton was in it, and then the draft pick from Kansas. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name.
Yeah, Lauri Markkanen came, as well as...
And three firsts.
Yeah, three unprotected firsts, and I believe two swaps.
That's not bad for Utah.
No, I think it's good, and obviously, you know, it's not as many picks as we got for Rudy, but I think the players are much better. Colin Sexton. I believe in Colin Sexton. I like Colin Sexton a lot. I was kind of surprised that Darius Garland ended up being the all-star for them and not Colin Sexton.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he had the better season, but I think Colin Sexton's capable of that, and so I think... And Lauri Markkanen, you know, who knows? Because the Jazz have a really, really good development staff, and people are super high on him coming out. He's that, you know, shooting big man that the Jazz desperately, desperately needed. So, you know, that might work out, and if it doesn't, then that's okay.
Yeah, and the wing player, Ochai, I am going to try after all, Agbaji,
I think.
He is good at Kansas. It worries me that he was an upperclassman. Because those typically, you know, aren't going to be superstars in the NBA. But he balled out in Kansas. I thought he was the best player on the national championship team.
Yeah, well, and I mean, well, I think with upperclassmen, if they get drafted that high, you know, maybe they're not stars, but I feel like they stick around.
Yeah.
Like, all those Villanova guys are upperclassmen, and they always stick around. And I know that, I believe it was Andy Larson, it could have been Tony Jones, but said the Jazz were very, very high on him. And he was actually the piece that when Cleveland put him in, the Jazz were like, okay, let's get this done, because they liked him a lot.
Oh, sweet.
So
that's good. I mean, if you're looking from Cleveland, you got Mitchell and Darius Garland, who was an all-star, you know, whether we agree with it or not. They have a really good backcourt.
Very good backcourt. Good defensive front court, which they're going to desperately, desperately need.
Yeah. I think they're in that clear second tier in the East behind Boston and Philly and whoever else we want to put in the top tier. I think they're a clear playoff team barring injuries and can maybe make something happen in the playoffs.
Yeah, I bet they I could definitely see them like getting a 6 seed and beating the 3 seed. I think they're capable.
Yeah. No, definitely be a league pass team too.
Yes.
They're bumping up in league pass rankings.
Definitely gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah. For sure. I think it is a good trade for both teams. People have to ask me, like, oh, are you upset the Jazz traded Donovan? And I always tell them, well, when we traded Rudy, we had to.
Yes.
And it would have been the same. If we would have traded Donovan first, Rudy would have had to go, just because what's the point?
Right. No, I agree. Yeah. And it got to the point because, yeah, because the Jazz could have kept both of them and been very, very good and probably not won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to take a step back to be less good, you're not going to get the draft assets that you need to win a championship. Hang on to one. So if you're taking a step back anyway, you might as well go the whole way.
I thought the Minnesota trade made no sense for Minnesota. I think the Cleveland trade makes sense for both Cleveland and the Jazz.
Yeah. And like, I don't, the Minnesota thing is funny. Cause like I do think that Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert is a really good pair. And I think that's going to work really well. I definitely don't think it's a team that's going to win a championship.
Yes.
Like, I just feel like they've definitely got a ceiling that's like the second round.
I'm just remembering now, we talked about this and it was heated. That's the only NBA stuff that's been happening.
Yeah. How do you feel, like, not about the value of the trade, but just Donovan being gone from Utah? How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel like no one is ever going to stay. Like, we grew up with Stockton and Malone were on the tail end, but still, like, they were there. And, like, those were the first players we knew, were probably Stockton, Malone, and Jordan were, like, the players were like, oh, we know who they are. So in my head, it's like, oh, people just play for the same team. That's what happens. And that's when Donovan's left side, that's literally never going to happen again. So it kind of bums me out.
Yeah, it just was because, you know, that first year, it was just after Gordon Hayward left. Everybody was so disappointed. Then we come back, we get Donovan. Not only do we make the playoffs, but we beat the Thunder with Russell Westbrook, who, if he did not average a triple-double that season, was just a year removed from doing so. Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, who people still liked at the time. And there was just so much hope in doing that. And everybody felt so good. It was like, we're gonna win a championship. And I don't know. And maybe this is a discussion for another time, but I feel like the players not wanting to be in Utah, I just think as a general statement, is sort of overblown.
Because I don't think they want to be anywhere.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. It's like, honestly, besides Miami, who is a free agent team? Because Boston's not. The Lakers have not been for 15 years, right? Milwaukee is not, who just won a championship. Phoenix is not.
Phoenix should be. That's Sarver's fault.
Yeah. That's another thing that we're probably not going to talk about.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The Knicks are not a free agent destination. The Nets are not. And I think if we look at the players who leave Utah, it's like really besides Gordon, and Gordon Hayward left because he was mad at management, not because he didn't like living in Utah. Like Darren Williams, that was a problem with the coach. That was not a problem with Utah in and of itself. We were kind of ready for Carlos Boozer to leave when he left. You know, we kind of wanted to get rid of Andre Kirilenko. So I'm not as worried as people about, as a lot of other people, about Utah not getting free agents just because nobody does. And to your point, if you look around the league, nobody stays on a team for 20 years like Karl Malone and John Stockton did. It's like them and Kobe, and that's it.
Yeah, that bums me out, but it is what it is. Yeah. You know, it's just the way the NBA works, which is fine, you know?
Yeah, so I'm more optimistic about Utah's having championship potential than a lot of other people. But
yeah. Should we talk about football?
Let's talk about football.
Yeah. Let's start with college football, then do some NFL stuff. We have literally no agenda. We're just chatting here. Let's start with what do you want to do? Should I pull up my top 25, the actual AP top 25? Do you want to talk about the Florida stuff first? What are you feeling?
Yeah, go ahead, pull up your top 25.
Okay. This is as of week two. So we're recording this week. You're probably listening to it after the week three games, because it's going to drop Friday night or Saturday morning. Florida State's playing Louisville right now. But this is as of after week two. So I'll go through it real quick. Tell me what you think.
Cool.
So my number one, Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, Kentucky, Oklahoma State is my top five. And then 6, USC, 7, Bama, 8, Arkansas, 9, Oklahoma, 10, Miami, 11, NC State, Baylor, or excuse me, NC State, 11, BYU, 12, 13, Baylor, Florida, Michigan State, 15, 16, Utah, Clemson, Ole Miss, Tennessee, TCU, 21, Cincinnati, Wake Forest, Kansas State, A&M, then Penn State, 25.
Okay, awesome. Interesting things. Well, there are a couple of teams that I noticed that we can go, and then if there's any you want to talk about in particular. Obviously, you have Ohio State higher than the AP poll and the coaches poll. What makes them better than Georgia?
Oh, they're a better quarterback. I don't think I've hidden my disdain for Stetson Bennett.
Yeah, that's true.
And they have better receivers. I think they, if they played, I think it's close for sure, but I think if they played they'd be able to put up enough points. They might not win, but I think they would win. They'd be able to score on Georgia, which not a lot of teams can say they would be able to.
All right.
That's it. I think C.J. Stroud's, at worst, the second-best quarterback in the country. Jackson Smith and Jigba last year was maybe the best receiver in the country, and he's not even the best receiver on Ohio State anymore. That's Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, they're just stacked unbelievably on offense. Travion Henderson's an unbelievable running back. I think they'd be able to score enough on Georgia. I think it's close, though, but, like, if Georgia had literally the 80th best quarterback in college football, I'd feel differently.
Right. Can I just say that last year there was so much talk, Stenson Bennett being patient, biding his time, sticking it out, waiting around, and finally he gets his chance. I just assumed he was a senior. We just talked about it so much that it's crazy that he's not.
He even transferred and came back. I think he's a COVID senior now. I might be wrong.
Okay, that makes sense.
But I think he's a COVID senior because we all know he's not going to go to the NFL because he can't do anything. He can't make any NFL throws. It's honestly so. If I were like Brock Vandergriff or one of the actual good quarterbacks on Georgia's roster, I'd be so frustrated.
Yeah.
So that's why I put Ohio State over Georgia. Okay. Georgia's very good, though. So.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, let me ask you about Cincinnati, because unless I'm seeing it right, they do not appear. Yeah, they do not appear in either the AP or the coaches poll.
I think that's wrong. Their only loss in 3 years in the regular season is to Arkansas, who they have like 12 or something, right?
Yes, 10 and 11.
I have them 8. They lost to an SEC team on the road in a one-score game. I feel like if you lose, and Arkansas at the time was ranked higher. I feel like if we're losing in a close game to a team ranked higher than you on the road, isn't that what we thought in the first place? Why are you dropping in the rankings?
Right. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's how I feel. I don't feel like Cincinnati would lose to a lot of those teams they have ahead of them. Like Oregon got I don't want to swear, but Oregon got beat down pretty good by Georgia, and they're 25. Like, and Cincinnati had a one-score loss on the road to a good Arkansas team. Not the defending national championships, but a very good Arkansas team.
Right.
So
yeah, it's hard for me to think that Wake Forest would beat Cincinnati, for example.
I think I have Cincy one ahead of Wake. I do, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that'd be close. And Sam Hartman, when the season started, Sam Hartman did not play in that first game, Wake's quarterback. Now he's back. He got medically cleared to play. I think he's one of the underrated quarterbacks in the country. So I do think Wake's good, but yeah, I would take Cincy in that game on a neutral field.
Okay.
But I think it would be close.
All right. Well, last one before we get to BYU and Utah. We have been, so one of a quarterback who went to our high school before we went there, shout out Alex Kate, went to Oklahoma State. So we have been waiting for Oklahoma State to kind of have a big, big year. They're 2-0 right now. You've got them in the top 5. Is this the year Oklahoma State finally does something big?
Well, you know what's crazy? And we watch a lot of Oklahoma State.
We do.
Love Oklahoma State. When we were on our missions, they were one Iowa State loss away from playing in the national championship game. They've been close. They've been a really good team for ever since Mike Gundy's been there. They've beaten a lot of good teams that aren't Oklahoma. I do think it's the year. Spencer Sanders is like a 3-year starter. I think he's a dark horse Heisman candidate. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Their defensive coordinator went to Ohio State. So that's a point for Ohio State over Georgia as far as they have a good defense. But Oklahoma State, they're back to offense. They're back to spreading out, outscoring you. They have a bunch of really talented skill players. Again, Mike Gundy's one of the, I think he's like third or fourth longest tenured coach in college football in one spot. But it all comes back to Spencer Sanders. He can run. He can throw accurately, makes good decisions. He's seen literally everything. He's at least a 3-year starter. Probably should have looked that up before our conversation. So I do think it's the year. Last year, they were about a yard and a half away from winning the Big 12 last year. I bet on them to win the Big 12 this year. I think they're the best team in the Big 12. And I do think they can make the playoff if things fall right. Realistically, they probably won't, just because two SEC teams are probably getting in and stuff like that.
Right.
But I do think Oklahoma State is the best team in the Big 12 and has a playoff chance.
Yeah. Well, like, look, I mean, with Oklahoma State, I would take an Orange Bowl. I don't know if that's a playoff game this year or not, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like for them to just win one of those big bowl games, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, where did they? They're eight in that poll.
Eight in the AP, seven in the coaches.
Okay. Like, why is Clemson so high?
Yeah, they did. I mean, last year they didn't like him at all. So
they have the best defensive line in the country, and DJ has played better than he did last year. And they're really talented, I know, but they've recruited at a high level, but it's not an Alabama level either. They don't get the Alabama. I don't think they should get the Alabama benefit of the doubt. I would pick Oklahoma State, like, not without even thinking, if they played Clemson today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I disagree with how they have it. Okay. Clemson should be behind Oklahoma State. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to watch where Oklahoma is at six in these polls. So that's going to be a fun game when that happens.
That's the thing. Oklahoma's fine. Like, Dylan Gabriel's a fine quarterback. I have him at nine, so it's not like a huge difference. But they're just getting the benefit of the doubt, where if you've watched both of them, Oklahoma State, I think, has been better.
Yeah. Now, this has been, and I don't know if people are taking this into account, but Oklahoma State, Oklahoma is probably the most lopsided rivalry in the country.
Yeah.
Which, if you think about it, it's like, I do not think the talent gap is as wide as it is. Like I think the talent gap at times between Ohio State and, like, or Michigan and Michigan State, for example, has been much bigger than Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. But Michigan State still kept that closer.
The thing is, no one, and we've talked about this, no one in the country wants to win more than Oklahoma.
Yes.
And that's really the only reason Oklahoma is one of the top five or six programs of all time.
Uh-huh.
Is the want to. Even more than Alabama, Oklahoma really wants it. Alabama's like either 1A or 1B, you know, but
yeah,
it's like that level of want at Oklahoma. Because, yeah, there it really shouldn't be. It's like 66 to 12 or something all the time. It's it's not. If they weren't in the same state, it wouldn't even be considered a rivalry.
Right.
But Oklahoma State's been such a good program for so long. Like, they have a bunch of, like, top 25 finishes. They've beaten a lot of top 25 teams. Mike, they've been to, I think it was the Fiesta Bowl they went to the year. They almost went to the national championship. They've been to a few BSCS bowls. They just can't beat, they've never been able to beat Oklahoma. So realistically, they'll probably be the best team in the Big 12, then lose to Oklahoma, and then go to the Big 12 championship is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So it'd be super frustrating if you were an Oklahoma State fan. Because that's actually my number one. Them in Kansas State, just because Jacob, who does the baseball, he went there. But when BYU's in the Big 12, Oklahoma State's my number one place I want to go see.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Because OU in Texas, I think, will be in the SEC.
Yeah. Get some of those, like an Oklahoma onion burger.
Exactly. Go to Eskimo Joe's. Stillwater's supposed to have a really nice golf course. Ricky Fowler went there.
Oh, nice.
It's Oklahoma State has a really good, like, athletic program overall.
Yeah, they're very good cross-country team.
Golf's really good.
Yeah.
Baseball's pretty good as well.
Baseball is good, yeah. So
good for them, yeah.
Should we talk about let's end on the Florida. Let's do BYU real quick. If in a year that I know that's not this year, BYU, even if they go undefeated, they're not going to the playoff. If this was the year they expanded to 12 teams, is BYU getting in, do you think?
Well, I have them at 12. I think the AP has them at 12, if I'm reading that right, as well.
AP has them 12. Coaches have them at 14. But looking at, we got Oregon this week, who got smoked by Georgia, but it's also Georgia, so I don't know how much that tells us.
Yeah, no, so I have them at 12. I think if they, I mean, it's tough to, I think the 12th team last year had like three losses. I think BYU would need to have more like one or maybe two.
Yeah, because they have Notre Dame, which is big, although Notre Dame lost to whatever that small school was.
Marshall.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't Appalachian State. They've got Arkansas, which could end up being a really big game. But other than that, you know, Boise State's not as good as they used to be. Stanford's not good this year. And then it's like East Carolina and Liberty and stuff.
So. Boise State is the worst. I think now BYU has, if they're trying to, I don't think they're making the playoffs, but if we're talking like New Year's Six, well, I think they have to beat Notre Dame. In a 12-team playoff, I think they could afford to lose to Arkansas. That could be game day. So right now, the highest two games on October 15th are Arkansas, BYU, and also USC, Utah. So game day could be in Utah that day. Yeah.
Is the USC game at Utah?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's going to be a very big who gets game day type of thing.
Yeah. I was talking with my buddy. We were hoping like one of the games is at like 1:30 and the other one's at 8, so we can go to both of them.
That'd be a fun day.
That would be sweet. But yeah, to get into your Six Bowl, I think they can afford to, they have to beat Oregon, and they can lose to either Notre Dame or Arkansas. But they have to beat Oregon. They can't lose to Oregon, I think.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, realistically, if you have one loss, it's not going to matter. But I think that Oregon is going to be a must win when you look at the Notre Dame and the Arkansas games.
Right.
But yeah, I think if it was a 12-team playoff, I would still feel comfortable if they had one loss over two. But it's kind of hard. I think that'll be interesting that first year that there is a 12-team playoff.
Did Notre Dame fall completely out of the rankings?
Well, they lost to Marshall. Like by two scores.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, like that's a because weren't they in the top five before?
Yes, they were, and they were beating Ohio State at the start of the third quarter. And that was another thing that annoyed me. Ohio State's number what, two in the country at that point. You're on the road in Columbus. You're leading at the end of the third quarter. You lose 21-10, and you drop from 5-8. Like if we really think Ohio State is like this dominant team. And we think Notre Dame is a top five, top eight team. Obviously, we think they'll lose. Why would we drop them in the rankings for that?
Right.
I hate how that works so much.
Yeah. Or like how the coaches kept Alabama one after they were so close with Texas.
Yeah. Now I have Alabama 7 after that game.
Yeah. Because that's pretty embarrassing.
When Alabama receivers can create separation, give me a call. Until then. They're not going to beat Georgia if their receivers can't get open. Yeah. Like, it was like BYU. They couldn't get open, and they committed 14 penalties. I don't think that's going to happen again. But the receivers not getting open, that's a legitimate problem, no matter how good Bryce Young did more for Alabama than I've seen a quarterback do in a single game in a long time.
Which is crazy, because when you think Alabama's like Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, like they've had so many good receivers.
Yeah, they're just for whatever reason down this, and maybe they pick it up and figure it out. Maybe someone emerges, but right now they haven't shown me that they can consistently create separation against those really athletic teams.
Yeah,
so Alabama, they were my number one, like my clear number one, but now they got to prove it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tell us about, we don't need to talk about Utah beating. Are they Utah Tech now, or, oh no, so it's still Southern Utah.
Well, so Dixie State is Utah Tech now.
Yes. Okay. But Utah didn't play Utah Tech. They played Southern Utah. Same difference. Southern Utah's terrible. They have a new coach that apparently the players don't like, and so a bunch of them quit.
Yeah.
So tell us about Florida.
It is humid as can be, Matt. And I'm writing an article about this that'll be on mjdoubletake.com. So that'll be, check that out when it comes out, hopefully up by the end of the weekend. But I felt like I was in a greenhouse. Like, you know, for us, it's a Hogle Zoo, but zoos, how they have like the butterfly section or whatever, and it's just like green and you're just like choking on water, basically.
Yeah.
That's what Gainesville was like. It was unbelievable. And it was like raining, but really it was just like wet the entire time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even hot, it was just like muggy, but it was the loudest stadium I've ever been in. Tom Petty's from Gainesville. Did you know that?
I didn't know that
till they played Tom Petty, but after the third start of the fourth quarter. It's pretty cool. The whole stadium was singing Tom Petty.
That's neat.
Game was super fun. The fans were really nice. The college kids were pretty rude, which is understandable. I think you get that anywhere.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, and it wasn't like anything aggressive, it was just like kind of annoying, but again, you get that anywhere. The adult fans were really nice, fun to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
The stadium has a bunch of like Tim Tebow stuff. They had a whole thing about the first African-American player to play at Florida, be on scholarship. So that was really cool. They had like the Danny Werfel, the Steve Spurrier, some Heisman stuff. And I'd been to the Swamp before, but it was in March. There's nothing going on. The stadium was just like open. So it was cool to see that stadium. Biggest stadium I've ever been in, loudest stadium I've ever been in, the goal line stand that Florida had on Utah, and then obviously the interception at the end of the game. I was like deafening. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was first SEC game. It was really fun.
It was a really good game too. Like I thought Utah was going to pull it off.
I was watching the game back on YouTube because I was on like the eighth row in the end zone. So awesome view, awesome seat, but I couldn't see some of the stuff. So watching back on YouTube, Utah actually played better than it looked like they did in the stadium, from my view.
Yeah.
It was a really close game. Anthony Richardson is sick.
He's really, really good.
He was unbelievable. If I were an NFL team, I would bet on him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was unreal. But yeah, it was a fun game. I thought Utah played well. And Florida was unranked after that game. They lost to Kentucky, who I am very high on, higher than everybody else. Love Kentucky. So that wasn't a huge surprise that Florida lost to Kentucky. But I think Florida's going to be a good team. Billy Napier is a good coach from Louisiana. So, yeah, I recommend going to the Swamp. It was a fun first SEC game.
Nice. What was the best thing that you ate in Florida?
Well, I don't know if this was the best, but we had fried gator. That was pretty good.
Nice.
The fried frog legs were not that good.
Yeah, I don't see that being, because I don't like bones.
It was super thin and long, which was kind of weird. But the fried gator was cool. There was, in Daytona Beach, there was really good tacos. It was like one of those places, like the menus in Spanish.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were, obviously, me and my friend were the only English speaking people there. I'll look it up and give a shout out, because that was probably the best food. I'm trying to think. Disney World, I think, is still overrated.
I can go on a rant about that while you're looking that up.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it's so expensive.
It's so expensive. It's crazy expensive. Like, to spend $120 to go on 6 rides the whole day. You know, it's just, and they're not, and if you're a roller coaster enthusiast, then go to a Six Flags, yeah. You know?
And the Star Wars ride we were on that everyone was hyping up, it broke twice while I was on the ride.
Uh-huh.
So, like, my last 3 hours were getting kicked off a ride. I was, like, waiting and then getting kicked off. It was annoying.
Yeah. So that's annoying. That's dumb.
If you're in Florida, though, Poncho's in Daytona Beach and then Taco Dirty in Tampa were fantastic. Okay. Both really good places.
Nice.
St. Augustine is sick. I went to Clearwater, like the Gulf side of Florida, for the first time. Very pretty. We'd only been on the Atlantic side as far as I know.
Yeah, you would know better than me.
Yeah. But I love St. Augustine, so I love going back there. But Clearwater is really cool as well. Shout out to my buddy Jacob, who's coming on the show pretty soon to talk baseball once the playoffs are set. Showed me Taco Dirty. Got to see a little bit of Tampa for the first time, which is a cool city.
Yeah.
So Adam Schefter tweeted out an thing about like what cities had the most high school football players. And it was like Bradenton, Florida, Tampa, Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Plantation, Florida. It was like over half of them were Florida.
Yeah.
It was crazy. They play some good high school football down there. So you would think all three Florida schools should be a lot better than they are. And I think Florida is on the right track. I think Miami is as well. Florida State, I don't know if they are, but I think Miami and Florida are both going to be a lot better, like where they should be in the near future. Mm-hmm. It's hard. We were right where I was. So we're in the end zone, like the Florida end zone where the players come out. I was on like the 8th row and the recruits were like the first 4 or 5. So we were right in front of the recruits. And the same thing when I was at Notre Dame, we were sitting right. I was on the front row in the student section there. And the next section over was the recruits. So both of those places, like, if I were a 17-year-old kid, I'd be hard to not commit on the spot to, like, either of those places. They're pretty insane atmospheres. Yeah. Especially from Florida. Like, here, like, 90,000 people, loudest it's ever been, intense. It's, like, I've heard LSU's, like, proactive, where, like, a lot of crowds are, like, reactive. They cheer for what's happening. LSU's, like, proactive, where they cause things to happen. Florida was a bit like that as well.
Yeah.
So it was cool to be in an SEC crowd. And I joke about as much as anyone else about how the SEC, like, chants the whole SEC thing, which I think is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool to be a part of. Cool. If you're a fan, you got to go. Even if it's, like, a random game. I recommend Florida because there's so much to do in the state of Florida. And Gainesville's a cool town as well. Yeah. And so, big fan. Happy I went. It was fun.
Cool. Sounds like a good trip.
Yeah. So, yeah, put it on the list. And also, again, the article is going to be on mjdoubletake.com, just kind of writing about how it was, the atmosphere, things like that. So go check that out. I'll do the whole tweeting it out thing once it does come out.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Do you want to do any NFL stuff or just get to the interview?
Whatever. We can mention the NFL real quick.
Let's mention. This is the least outline. I mean, we've done homework as far as, like, we're watching everything that we're talking about, so we're not making stuff up. But as far as the agenda for the show, we're winging it.
That's fine.
It's kind of fun. That's kind of what we designed the show about anyways, right?
Yeah.
Let's just run through it really quick. It's only been 1 week. The Chiefs played the Chargers last night, so still early on. Let's talk about kind of good, bad, the ugly so far. Do you want to start with the Eagles? Because I know that's your Your guys.
Well, the only thing we need to say about the Eagles is it's a good time for the Eagles just because they're like, I don't think it's a Super Bowl year, but it's kind of fun just seeing the trajectory up. As of now, they're 1-0. The Cowboys are 0-1, so I'm happy.
I thought the Eagles were going to win the division before. And now with Dak out, it's a lock, I think. Unless something goes disastrously wrong. So,
how long is Dak supposed to be out for?
Well, Jerry Jones said like 3 weeks. Doctor said 6 to 8. So. Okay.
So 3 weeks then?
Yeah.
What Jerry Jones says?
Jerry Jones, I would hate so much being the coach of the Cowboys and having to deal with, or the general manager and having to deal with Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Also, Mike McCarthy sucks, so he should get fired. I've been saying as soon as they hired him, I was like, they should fire him. He's not very good. He showed in Green Bay. He wasn't very good.
Yeah, to win one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, that's inexcusable. Oh, well, that's all I really need to say about the Eagles for now. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I'm excited to watch. You know, it's kind of a make or break year for Jalen Hurts, I think. So that'll be fun.
The game this week against Minnesota, Justin Jefferson, Aaron Rodgers said is the best player in the NFL. Who knows if that was just because Justin Jefferson beat the crap out of him. But that should be a fun game, Minnesota. I think Minnesota has an outside chance. It's hard to bet against Aaron Rodgers, but I think Minnesota has a chance just because Justin Jefferson keeps ascending. Kevin O'Connell runs that L.A. Rams type of offensive scheme, so I think that's going to help Kirk Cousins quite a bit be produced better than the quarterback he actually is. The Bears beat the Niners, which made me want to jump off a bridge. You remember that?
I do remember that.
Detroit lost, but they're going to be a tough out this year. You watch any Hard Knocks?
I've not seen the Hard Knocks.
This was the first year I've watched it. You think I'd watch it more? Right. It was entertaining. And so Jamal Williams, our BYU, fellow BYU alum, he was the star of the show. Malcolm Rodriguez, Oklahoma State Cowboy. He's awesome. Linebackers, I think, are like the best characters in the NFL.
I can see that.
A good linebacker, that's just like the heart and soul of the team, I think. So.
I did see some Jamal Williams highlights, and that's my guy. I love Jamal Williams.
Who doesn't love Jamal Williams? He's dope. Let me think what else is important. I still think the Niners win the NFC West just because I'm biased, but realistically, the Rams are a better team.
Yeah.
I think the Saints are in trouble. I think they're going to be worse than I thought they would be. People are coordinating the Bills. I still think the Chiefs, I think we showed last night, they killed Arizona week one. They came back from 10 down against the Chargers in week two. It's the same thing. Like, I wouldn't bet against LeBron. I wouldn't bet against the Chiefs yet. Like, until they show me, I know they lost to the Bengals last year, but like, I think they're the team to beat still, as good as Buffalo is. Now the players might have got better, but they didn't significantly improve their roster, Buffalo, in the offseason.
Yeah.
So I don't see why they went from what they were last year, which was a good team who didn't make it to the AFC Championship, to the clear cut. I just don't see why they're the clear cut favorites. I think they should be a favorite, but I don't see why everyone's like obsessed with them.
Yeah, that's fair. Ruben, what do you think about? What do you think about the Broncos kicking a field goal?
It just doesn't make sense. Like, they had so much time. Like, I'm fine if you want to get like kick a 40-yarder. Like, if you start the drive like, hey, we just need to get to X yard line. But there's no way that yard line was a 64-yard field goal, you know?
Yeah.
I think you try to go for a touchdown, you try to get at least to the 20, but you shouldn't be settling. They had plenty of time to do something. So I think it's just poor coaching, and it sucks for Russ. It was crazy how many of his teammates tweeted stuff out. Like, did you see any of this stuff?
I did not see.
So like Doug Baldwin tweeted a gif of like, you know, like,
oh, the Seahawks teammates. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Like Russ is just, I don't know what happened to him, but it seems like no one likes him.
Yeah. That's not the energy that he gives off.
And even Pete Carroll, like, who's, I feel like he's pretty animated on the sideline, but I feel like for an NFL coach, like, he's not gonna be trash talking or anything. He was saying stuff after the game like, well, I think you know why it was a pretty special win for us. Like, I don't know, like, I would imagine it just doesn't seem genuine as I imagine what it is,
right?
But when he came out, like, when they won that Super Bowl, I don't think any of us realized this. And then as more and more he's been in the spotlight, been an NFL star, they were kind of seeing, like, did you see the video of him, like, coming out of the tunnel, like, practicing high-fiving people and stuff like that?
Oh, I haven't seen that. That's
It's not good. It's cringe.
Yeah.
It's just not genuine. Like, it's one thing to be like, let's ride Broncos Nation, blah, blah, blah. It just seems like he's trying to act like an NFL quarterback, and he's not just an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's like, he's saw some moves, like, okay, this is how an NFL quarterback should act.
Yeah.
You know? And we're not buying it, which is kind of weird. But, weird. Yeah, it's been a quick fall for us.
Yeah. For us. All right.
Poor Russ.
Shall we hear from, well, I will have needed to not be there for the interview. It's pre-recorded, so I didn't get to be on, unfortunately. I was at the parent-teacher conference, which was not as fun as talking to a BYU soccer player.
Yeah, no, Eli was cool, and you would have liked talking to him as well, so yeah. So bad timing.
Excited to listen in.
Yeah, so here's the interview with Eli. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. We're joined now by my buddy Eli Homestead, BYU soccer player. Eli, appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, Jake, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So Eli was a missionary, Mormon missionary, when I was in Scottsdale. We play soccer at the church all the time. I was like, man, Elder Homestead at that point is pretty good. And then found out he played for BYU, so it made sense.
Yeah, dude, those were good times. Helped me stay sharp, you know, playing in the church gym with like 30 people on a basketball court. Fun stuff.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we're mostly going to talk about soccer, but I do want to ask you about, you know, being an athlete and a missionary, because a lot of people here, especially when BYU is playing, like, oh, their quarterback's 25, whatever, they all did the LDS missions. What was it like being a missionary, but also knowing you're going to have to, like, stay in somewhat shape because you had to come back to the soccer team?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of tough just because in high school you get to prioritize your sport so much. You can kind of build your life around it and you get to work out as much as you want. Then the mission hits and, you know, your priorities radically change. So I think, like, mentally it's harder than physically, because when you get back, you know, you can get back in shape relatively quickly as long as you're taking care of your body. But it's tough, like, you know, feeling yourself getting a little bit weaker and slower and everything while you're out there. So I try not to stress about it too much. I worked out pretty hard in the mornings. My mission president let us wake up 30 minutes early if we wanted to. And so we had some apartment gyms I'd work out at. I was companions for about 6 months with an elder that runs at Utah State, Elder Farragher, if you remember him. So him and I would wake up early and get to work out pretty hard, just running and doing track workouts and, like, longer runs. But it's just kind of, like, mentally stressful knowing that you're, you know, not putting in the same time that everyone else is for a whole 2 years.
Yeah, did you play your freshman year and then go, or did you just go straight out of high school to your mission?
I played my freshman year. So yeah. I played with the team end of 2017, beginning of 2018, and then went out.
Was it weird as a freshman? Because most freshmen, they're like, oh, I'm trying to, you know, get a relationship with the coaches, get my spot on the roster, and you're like, I'm leaving for 2 years. Was that weird being on the team while knowing you were leaving?
Oh, yeah, dude, it was so weird. I mean, it was a great season. I would definitely do it again. But I mean, I went from playing in high school where my teammates, you know, 17 or 18, hopping on the BYU team. There's only three of us, I think, that hadn't served mission. So everyone is, you know, 21, 22, 23. One of my teammates, you know, had a child midseason. Like, three guys got married. It was just like such a crazy change. And especially because I played that year, you know, to build those relationships and you start getting team chemistry. And then I went on the 2 year mission, came back, and the team was just totally different. There's, you know, maybe five or six guys who I played with beforehand. But it was, like, such a big change. It was, like, a whole new team that I came back to. So it was pretty weird, you know, like, playing with the team but knowing I was going to be gone. I felt like people were a little less invested and, you know, like, building team chemistry with you and getting really good friends with you because they knew you were leaving.
Yeah, people who I talked to, I went to BYU as well, obviously. So when I talk to my friends who aren't Mormon or from Utah and tell them, like, yeah, BYU, like, people would bring their babies to class or get married all the time and stuff like that. It's just so different than any other college. Especially being on an athletic team, I imagine it's only hiding. So just such a unique situation to be in.
Yeah. Well, remember in our team group chat, you could send in list of, like, a name of list of the people you wanted to get in for free. So, like, hey, like, you know, let this person in for free. And a teammate paid in. That's, like, how he announced that, like, his wife had given birth. He was like, hey, paid in for this, and, like, Payton Jr. born last night. You know, we're all hyped about it, but it felt kind of surreal.
That's crazy. That's so funny. And let's talk some soccer a little bit as well. So BYU men's soccer, I guess, is walking through the differences because I don't understand 100%. Because the women's soccer is like a university sport, but the soccer is an extramural sport. Is that right?
Yeah. So BYU men's soccer has kind of a long and interesting history because back, I want to say in the 80s, we were a Division I team. And they were, you know, pretty average D1 team. And then with the implementation of Title IX, like the, you know, the College Act for Equality for Men and Women, like in many different ways passed, one of the things included was that you had to have an equal number of roster spots for men's and women's sports. But football has essentially like a roster of, I think like 80 plus, I don't have an exact number, but just it's a very large roster. And because of that imbalance, they had to like cancel some men's sports and create some new women's sports. So when Title IX was implemented, the BYU men's team was cut from being like an NCAA team to being a club team. I can't remember the exact dates for that, but when they made that change, they were a pretty dominant club team. I mean, there's other schools that happened to, but they won, I think, about 10 or 7 or 6 maybe national championships in that time, like club national championships. And then in about, I think, 2001, they made the jump from club to semi-pro. So the BYU actually bought a franchise in the PDL League, Professional Development League, which is the third tier in the U.S. So there was like the MLS, a league called the USL, and then the PDL below that. So from like 2001 to about 2017, they played this PDL, which had its, you know, there's pros and cons to it. It was a super competitive league. It was in some ways better than D1 because D1 athletes who, you know, wanted to go pro would play in the PDL in the summer. And there was like, you know, no real rules about age or classes or anything. So it was a super competitive and intense environment, but you also only played in the summer. So, you know, most students were around, the games weren't that many fans. It was more of like, you know, a local community thing versus a BYU thing. And then for a variety of reasons in 2017, we became club again. And so now we're an extramural, like a club soccer team. So it's like a BYU sport, but not NCAA, it's club.
Interesting. So when you're getting recruited, I guess what's the recruitment process? Because you, I imagine BYU is the number one or at least pretty high on your list of where you wanted to play.
Yeah, BYU is absolutely my number one. I could have played at some other schools, D1 out east, but then ultimately decided that, you know, for a lot of reasons, but, you know, mostly spiritual ones, that I wanted to play at BYU. And so when I committed, it was actually to play PDL. And it's kind of a different commitment process because you're committing to like this, you know, the semi-pro franchise versus like an NCAA team. So there's a lot fewer hoops to jump through. But so I committed to come to BYU to play with that in mind. And then like my first week, 2 weeks before I got here, is when some things went down and we got pulled from club or pulled from PDL and put into club. So I never actually played in the PDL. That change happened like right before I got here. So I was in the first team that was club again out of the PDL.
Okay. Interesting timeline. I'm always fascinated because, so I follow high school football recruiting pretty intensely, but that's such a big thing in its industry. With other sports, I'm so fascinated just because I imagine it's harder for like a soccer coach or a swim coach or a track coach. And I've talked about this with other athletes on the show. Were you sending your tape to the BYU coach? Did you have to like come out to camps, or how do you get recruited for like, especially if it's a club sport, a smaller sport than like football or basketball?
Yeah. And soccer recruiting in general is, I imagine, a headache for coaches everywhere because soccer is such a, it's harder to get, you know, clear numbers and statistics on it versus, you know, like in football, you have yards, catches, tackles. It's a lot more measurable. And also for soccer, like the best players play in lots of different places. In the high school system, you have like generally your high school team is not the best team you play for if you're actually good. Like I played on my high school team for fun, but my club team was, you know, far superior to my high school team. Whereas for football, you know, like you play in your high school team and that's like the top level. So BYU sports camps, they have like the men's and women's soccer camps is like one form of recruiting. So it's interesting because it's like lots of youth and it's a very kind of fun atmosphere. But every year you have a group of every week, there's like 20 or 30, you know, kind of competitive older high school guys that want to play for BYU. So that's a good way to kind of get noticed by the coaches. So I went to one of those camps the summer before my junior year. And then I sent them a junior year highlight tape and I got invited to a combine the winter, I think, like in the middle of my senior year. So I went and played at a combine by invitation, and then I got an offer to come and play after that.
Did you talk to any other schools? Like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but back east, men's soccer is more of a Division I sport than a club sport, right? With like North Carolina, Maryland, those type of schools.
Yeah, for sure. So like in the state of Utah, there's two D1 NCAA teams. There's UVU and Dixie State are the only options for D1. But I mean, in Maryland, you have University of Maryland, you have George Mason, you have UMBC, you have like a ton of different schools, UVA. There's just a lot more, soccer's bigger, and there's a lot more of these like kind of smaller D1 schools where they don't have big football teams. So like the Title IX isn't an issue. Like American is another example. Georgetown, like there's just a ton of, like within an hour drive of where I grew up, there's, you know, probably 10, 15, 20 D1 programs versus, you know, two in the entire state of Utah.
Did any of them talk to you about playing for them, or was it just BYU or nothing for you?
I had some like informal conversations. I never like got official offers because I told them I was going to play at BYU. But I could have played at a number of those, like George Mason, American, maybe Georgetown, probably not UMD at the time. They were ranked number one in the nation when I was in high school. So I definitely could have played at some of those schools. UMBC was another one that I like had some scouts come out to my games for. But I kind of decided at the end of my junior year that I really wanted to make BYU happen. And that kind of became my goal. And so like I remember my senior night in high school, UMBC had scouts at the game, and they had like the senior night walkout thing. They talked about their graduation plans, and they said that I was going to go to BYU for college. And the scouts were like pretty annoyed that they'd come out, and then they heard that.
That's kind of funny. We were talking before we started recording a little bit about like your schedule. Will you walk me through, or us through, the fall and the spring schedule, like the differences, like who you guys are playing and things like that?
Yeah, for sure. So the fall, we start out, we had our first game last Friday. And so it starts out slower. We have games about once a week, and it's pretty regional. So we'll play Utah State, Boise, Weber, kind of the schools around here. And we'll play each of those teams twice, once home and once away. And then the top, I think the top three teams from our region go to play in regionals. And our region takes in like Utah, Washington State, Oregon, kind of that area. And so once you go to regionals, it's a group stage format, and then like two elimination games and then a final. And so the winner of regionals then qualifies for nationals. And nationals is the entire country, so you could play anyone. And so then we'd fly out to nationals. Nationals this year will be in Texas. And you have like, again, a group stage round, and then four elimination games to a championship game. And then that's like the culmination of our official season, is late November at nationals.
Okay. So is the fall a bigger season than the spring?
Yeah. So we mirror the NCAA in that way. So the fall, it's like our league, everything matters. It's, you know, about getting results, getting wins. The spring is kind of it's a little bit more competitive for us. But that's mostly training and then playing these friendlies against different schools. So that's when we'll actually play, you know, D1, D2, D3 programs. So in the fall, usually in our region, we don't face that much competition. I should pull up some stats for you. But I think we conceded maybe 5 goals our entire fall season and scored 50 or 60.
Wow.
So we're pretty good. And especially in our region, like I've never lost a club game in my entire career, but in the spring we'll play more competitive games. So like this last spring, we ended up losing to Denver's D1 team up in Denver. We played UNLV's D1 team and beat them 2-1. We played Westminster, a local D2, should have beat them. We were up 1-0 till they got a scrappy goal in the 88th minute. So that's what the spring season is. It's a little bit more developmental. We try things out more. We can bring some guys on, like some new guys on to train with us. We'll have guys, you know, get off their missions in the spring and start training, you know, getting ready for the fall. So yeah, the fall is like our main season, and then spring, it's a little more open-ended, but in some ways more competitive because we play better teams.
Yeah, I'm looking at the homepage for BYU's men's soccer website, and this picture of you, I imagine you just scored a goal. Do you know what picture I'm talking about?
It's like my hands out behind me.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I love that picture.
It's a great picture, dude.
That was our home opener last year against Utah. That was after I scored my second goal of the game.
Dude, and the black jerseys, I have to say, look pretty good.
Dude, right? With the blue numbers on there.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. One question I had, because we were talking about you're playing like Utah State, Boise State. But like University of Utah, for example, in other sports, they're in the Pac-12. In other sports, BYU's in the WCC. Do you like other schools that BYU typically plays, like St. Mary's, Gonzaga? Are they either D1 or don't have soccer, or how does that work?
So yeah, that's their D1 conference. We have a different conference through, I think the organization is called NIRSA, NIRSA. I can't remember exactly what the acronym stands for. So we operate in like a different division. So we don't play, you know, as many of those California schools until we get to like nationals.
Okay. Interesting. Good to know. Now what, and this is kind of backtracking a little bit, but like when we're in high school, a lot of players who play for like Real Salt Lake or the MLS is getting into more academies more and more. If you're playing college soccer, either D1 or club, is there still a path to professional soccer, or do you have to be in one of those academies when you're going through high school and stuff like that?
There's definitely still a path to professional soccer playing D1. That's one of the big, you know, criticisms you hear about the American soccer system is that it's just like, you know, our best players don't play here. They'll go overseas, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, I mean, I know I have friends of mine that have played D1 and then played, you know, professional. We have guys from the BYU team. We have one that's, I think, in Germany right now. He shipped out about a month ago. We had a guy playing Australia, another one in Germany. So even from our club program, we have guys go pro. So there is still a path, but the people that are really good, if they're really focused on it, usually will end up, you know, playing for an academy. And when they're 17, 18, you know, starting to play pro right then. Because in the U.S., especially for college and football, you know, it's much more, there's like one clear path and it's much more institutional, where, you know, you go play D1, then you register for the draft. And the MLS does have a draft system, but oftentimes, like in Europe, guys will start just getting paid when they're 16, 17, 18, just for playing well. You know, it's a much blurrier line between amateur and pro. So a lot of guys will, you know, play in the U.S., play for RSL, play in these academies, and then go to Europe or Germany or Australia where you have these, or South America, where there's like a more second and third division teams that they can work their way up through versus trying to go straight to an MLS team.
All right. Now, I have one question that's soccer, but not BYU soccer specific. I imagine you follow world soccer as a fan relatively closely, or are you too busy for that?
I don't follow as closely as some of my other soccer buddies. I like to watch it, but I'm not I don't know everything all about it.
All right, because I was going to ask who you think is going to win the World Cup.
I mean, I hope the U.S. is going to win the World Cup, but I don't know if that's where I'd put my money if I was betting. I don't know. I mean, these are probably aren't surprising picks, but England and France both have pretty crazy teams right now. You know, France won it last time, but I don't know. Those two teams are who I'm betting on.
Yeah, I just want the United States to beat England in that group stage game. Anything else I'll be fine with, but if we beat England, I'd be stoked.
I want to get out of the group stage and win. I want to win an elimination game. I've never seen that in my entire. I love the watching like the national team play, and I've never seen us win an elimination game in the World Cup. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Should be a good year. I'm excited, Eli. Appreciate you coming on. I'm gonna make it out to one of your games. Definitely Utah BYU. Any sport, that's an intense game. So I'll try to make it out to one of those specifically.
Yeah, for sure. Hope to see you out there, dude. Thanks for chatting with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. I'll hit you up. I might not be able to make it this Friday. I'll try to make it the other one, but I'll definitely hit you up either one I'm going to or whatever game I'm going to.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Let me know.
Thank you. Again, that's Eli Homestead, BYU men's soccer. My pal, appreciate him coming on, and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. Big thanks to Eli for coming out. Again, if you're in Utah, go check it out. I'm going to make it to a game. So hopefully one of the Utah games, because any Utah BYU game is intense, not just the football.
Right.
So that'll be fun. And you hear people, like I was listening to Marty and McGee the other day, the two guys on ESPN who do the SEC show. And they were just talking like random college football. And McGee. I'm blanking on his first name. I apologize. He's from Raleigh, went to the University of Tennessee. He's talking about big games, and he's brought up Utah and BYU. He said, like, that was one of the most intense games I've ever been in. The fans talking about just pure vitriol. And that's kind of why I don't like the game. Because
just being in that
environment. Yeah, because I grew up huge Utah fan. Our mom teaches there. I went to BYU. So I love BYU, the university, love the football team. And it is nasty, honestly. Yeah.
No, the reason, like, Kyle Whittingham seems like a good dude, and, like, I feel like I should want to support the Utah football team. I just can't do it because so many people, like adults, were so mean to me as a kid about it because Utah won so many years in a row.
It is a big deal here, and that carries over to every sport. Football is big, but it carries over to soccer. Women's soccer, we went to a few games. The volleyball is intense. Basketball is really intense. So I'll have to make it for the BYU-Utah men's soccer game up in Salt Lake City. Appreciate Eli coming on. We'll try to be more consistent. Pretty soon baseball playoffs are going to start, so we'll have Jacob on when that's on. Football season is coming up, so we'll do a lot of football stuff. And, yeah, that article about the Florida game, mjdoubletake.com. I'll tweet it all out when it gets released. Any final words?
Just hope. Let's cheer for the Cowboys to keep losing, I guess.
Well, I don't think you're gonna need a lot of luck. I think that's just gonna be happening until Dak gets back. They can be like 1-6. I think looking at their schedule,
I would love that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, to the Cowboys losing, I hope Eli does well. We'll talk to y'all later.